on the telephone line. Happy to welcome back to the program from Defector.com, host of the Distraction Podcast, David Roth joins us. Hello there, Mr. Roth.
Hey, how are you?
Listen, we're on the verge of nuclear war, baseball lockout, but it's March and spring's coming, so, you know, I'm okay. You?
I was wondering how you were going to end that sentence, because, like, the way you started it, it's definitely been pretty heavy on my mind, but I knew there was a butt coming, and I knew that there was some sort of pivot that was going to be attempted. I'm all right. You know, there's so many bad things happening at once that I can't really notice any one of them in particular. So it's just kind of like a, I don't know, like I've overcharged. It's like, you know, I'm in energy saver mode right now.
Right. It's like the universe abhors a vacuum. Okay, maybe we're on the back end of COVID and I'm not going to die from that. On the other hand, Putin's crazy and has nuclear weapons, and I got to remember how to do those duck and cover drills again.
Yeah, I'm trying not to. I mean, the nuclear thing was like, I'm just old enough that was like a presence in my mind as a kid. And of course, it's, you know, beyond being scary, you know, like you ask your parents to sort of explain why you shouldn't be afraid of something. And, you know, my parents, to their credit, were like, no, it's really scary. Like, you're totally right to be afraid of that. And that was kind of a bad beat when you're 7 years old, where I was just like, oh, okay, I guess I'll just keep feeling bad then. But it was, at this point, like, it's hard to, I had sort of forgotten how to deal with that particular anxiety. But I'm the COVID, I'm focusing on the back end of COVID thing. We rebooked a vacation that we were originally planning on taking in March of 2020. Like, basically, we're going to be leaving 2 years to the day that we didn't leave.
Wow.
So that's a good thing that I'm hanging on to.
Yeah.
That most of those restaurants are still open. It's still warmer in Charleston, South Carolina than it is in New York. So, like, these are that's the scale of victory that I'm working on right now.
Well, good for you. Yeah, we're getting ready to make our masks optional in school. So I've got to adjust my mindset to going in there with a bunch of many of them unvaccinated kids and take my mask off and be cool about it. And, you know, my brain says, you're vaccinated, you're boosted, you're fine, you got nothing to worry about. But then there's that little voice going, oh, really? Oh, really? Do you know those kids?
Yeah.
They're the ones that gave you colds every year for 30 years, for God's sakes.
That's the part of it that I think, I mean, I've had the same thought. I think everybody sort of has. And even knowing that you're more or less okay, there's still, you know, there's a lot of scar tissue to work through just in terms of the habits that we've formed over the last couple of years. But the other point that you made about, like, how gross the world is has really been on my mind. I've been taking the train more just this last week. I've been going to the office and going to see people. And I'm not going to, like, stop wearing the mask on the subway. Like, I don't miss the smells. I don't need to, like, whatever other people are, like, eating or coughing about or yelling about on there. Like, that's fine. Like, their sputum is their own. I don't need anything to do with it.
Yeah, that's my approach too. I mean, even before there was a pandemic, depending on where I was, like if I flew, man, I was lathered in anti-bac both before and after. So that's not going to change.
Yeah, and my friends that are teachers have had a similar experience to you. I think just like being in a school with a bunch of gross kids who are constantly just yelling in each other's mouths because it's like a TikTok thing now to do that is like, it's gross. And they would always get these weird, you know, like just down for a week with like a mystery cold that had been brewed up, like only among the 15 and 16 year old population of the Bronx. Like that was where it originated. It's brutal.
Well, let's talk about, I'll say happier things, but no, Major League Baseball. Has there ever been a group of owners in a sport who cared less about their particular sport?
I mean, I sure think that there's a long tradition of owners that care more about breaking the players to their will than about winning games or, you know, and I guess also, you know, more than making money. The thing to me that's been bizarre about it is that, like, I wouldn't hold NFL owners up as an exemplar of any type of behavior that you'd want somebody to emulate.
No.
And yet they're making enough money that they can at least just shut up and let it happen. You know, that, like, as annoying as they can be, they're not trying to, I mean, well, whatever, until the next time. They're not locking anybody out. Like, everybody's getting rich. Everyone knows that that's also true in baseball and that the team valuations and the revenues go up regardless of how good the team is or isn't. And it's still not enough for them. I mean, that's the part of it that's been so frustrating in looking at this is that I can't really tell what the owners want. That, like, all of the proposals that they have these little tricks, and, like, there was Ross Stripling of the Blue Jays was talking about how when they got the language back on, I guess it was Monday night, that they had inserted new language in under the competitive balance tax that, like, had never been discussed before. Like, these things, that's bargaining in bad faith. Like, if that were in front of the National Labor Review Board, like, they would be in trouble for doing that. And yet they're just kind of doing it seemingly for yucks. Like, it's not helping them. It's not moving anything closer to a goal. It just feels kind of like a kick at this point.
And I love what you said about Rob Manfred. Well, at least he looks the part.
Yeah, God, the grim. You saw the photo.
Oh.
We couldn't use it because this wasn't on our wire service, but an AP photographer got it of him between, you know, while the two sides were caucusing, just working on his golf swing on the balcony.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just the real picture of dedication from that guy. But I've been trying to figure out if he doesn't like baseball or if he likes baseball but wants to just, like, mess around with it constantly. So I've never gotten the sense from him that he's, like, everything he's ever says about the game is, like, it's too slow, it's too long, there's too much baseball in it, like, I think we should get rid of the players, whatever. All, like, kind of not things that you hear fans say. But there's also, like, a level of dedication. Like, he's worked his whole life on the management side, on the internal labor relations, like, law practice. Like, it's all really been leading up to this, to the moment where, like, everyone in America that cares about baseball is encouraging him to step into a jet engine. Like, what a life. What a choice.
Yeah, he dislikes the game so much, I thought he was part of the ESPN Sunday night crew.
Yes, it's a similar... Well, that whole vibe, I feel like baseball really needs to sort of work on it. I mean, it's that way in a lot of sports, I think. I mean, you listen to Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy call a game, and you can get convinced that NBA basketball is broken too, as long as you're not actually watching the game, which is usually cool. But yeah, man, the whole, like, the John Smoltz thing where you just kind of, like, everything that happens, you're like, well, you shouldn't have done that. Like, that's no way to watch a game or, like, do anything.
We're talking with David Roth here on Downtown. Well, on to what I am mystified was not a successful protest. It had the makings of something memorable. The trucker protest in Washington, D.C. for the State of the Union. What went wrong?
Long story short for listeners who weren't familiar with it was that they were dramatically short on truckers. They actually wound up receiving zero truckers where they had expected many truckers. I feel like that's, to a certain extent, this is like what we were talking about before, where there's like, there's just too many other bad things happening now for a bunch of like goateed guys from Scranton, Pennsylvania to complain about mask mandates. Like, we're on to other problems now, dude. Like, nobody, like, as unbearable as that was when it seemed like an important thing to them, I don't think that anybody but them really wants to hear that right now.
No, you're absolutely right about that.
Photos of like an empty plaza. That was delightful.
Well, yeah, you can see their frustration. They're like, but our thing that we were so upset at, why are you all paying attention to what's going on over there when, and they're lost.
Yeah, right. Like, this is sort of like, I'm the protagonist of reality, and I have some things I'd like to say. And you're focusing on this war, which seems very short-sighted to me. Why would you not want to listen to, I have this whole idea about how we got to start calling them Freedom Fries again, because I had a bad experience watching a movie, or whatever. It's just like, some real interesting Americans there.
The video of Ron DeSantis certainly got some people's attention, of him yelling out that I guess, even though they were South Florida, I think they were high school kids who were masked up, and he yelled at them about COVID theater. And the irony, of course, is that the COVID theater was him doing that, because I'm sure he knew they would be there, but wanted that captured on camera, because everything the people like DeSantis do is designed to get them 40 seconds on Fox News.
It's incredible. Can you, I mean, like, of all the futures for American politics, the idea that this guy's advanced team is setting up an event where they're like, I think it would be good for his numbers if he yelled at a bunch of teens. Like, can we make that happen? Like, it's important to us. Like, we actually, our internal polling shows that voters think that he's too nice to kids. Like, it's just such a bizarre gambit to me.
Well, because, and David, you know, it's because those kids have been brainwashed with, you know, the CRT.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So they believe in things like the germ theory of medicine.
Right, right.
That's why I'm going to homeschool. it's hard to know what to say about it. The thing with DeSantis to me, everybody talks about him as being like, if Trump doesn't run in 2024, that like we have to worry about DeSantis becoming president and stuff. It's worrying. I think he'd be a lousy president. I think he's done a pretty bad job in Florida, it seems like. I think he's too big a dork to get elected president, and I don't know that I want to like put any money on that. But just seeing that man, who is younger than me, talking in the tone of a really prissy septuagenarian to a bunch of teens, and then like turning around and giving a press conference, like I just can't believe that we would. I mean, obviously we've elected Donald Trump, like all bets are off. I just don't think that we could elect a weenie as president. Mm. I don't know that we're ready for that as a culture yet.
Well, and that's why he was yelling at the kids, because that's how the GOP has decided you defeat the idea of being a weenie or being weak is you yell at people. And the fact that they're defenseless teenagers, that doesn't enter into it, but you were yelling at them. And that's a good thing in the GOP eye.
Yeah. I think it's like it's a value neutral thing for sure. That like what you need to do is be aggressive, and you have to be aggressive towards people who can't yell back at you or hit back at you. That was a big, like Chris Christie was a big innovator in that space in New Jersey. He used to have these kind of like stagey arguments with when he was trying to, you know, basically break the education union in the state. That there'd be some teacher at one of his events who would yell at him, and then he'd be like, "Oh yeah, real tough guy," but like he's the one that has a microphone, so you can just hear some voice in the audience, and then he's pointing his finger and he's yelling. I feel like he must feel really cheated, because like he worked really hard to build the whole like I'm the biggest, loudest jerk that there is, like, and that's going to be my appeal, and then out of nowhere Trump comes up and just blows him off the stage.
Right, because it's like what you say to your kids, you know, if they're doing something like that. Look, you want to be a bully, there's always going to be a bigger bully than you, and it apparently it's true for the horse's ass theory as well. There'll always be somebody bigger.
Kind of inspiring that way. It really puts things in perspective.
And then we've talked about him before with you, but my goodness, your piece recently on the good gentleman from Alabama, Senator Tommy Tuberville. My goodness, he's figured it all out.
He's back. I was so happy to be able to write about him again. Because he's sort of, I wrote about him when he was, we were doing a theme week about U.S. senators and the Ottawa senators. It's a strange website. I don't recommend that people read it. That was a long time ago. But it was interesting to sort of read about Tuberville and then realize that like he was going to become a total like backbench guy who would just, you know, he's a Republican in Alabama. He'll get elected until he dies or sits down. But it's like to see him, he came out earlier this week and was sort of explaining the Russia-Ukraine affair to the Montgomery, Alabama Chamber of Commerce. And his explanation involved Putin invading Ukraine because Russia is a communist country and they can't feed their people, so they need more farmland, and Ukraine's got a lot of farmland. And I'm not going to gainsay the senator's intelligence on how much farmland is in the Ukraine. He's probably got access to information that you and I don't. Every other aspect of that is wrong in a way that I find completely delightful. Like, I feel... It's like, obviously, it's not what you want. Like, ideally, someone named Tommy Tuberville, just named Tommy Tuberville, would not be in the United States Senate. Someone who acts like Tommy Tuberville would be as far from the United States Senate as possible. But if this is the moment that we have to live in, then I'd rather it be just, like, a weird golf guy making stuff up to the Chamber of Commerce and all of them being like, wow, I never thought of it like that.
And
if it has to be stupid, let's max it out.
Right, and I would take that, I think, well, I don't want him to be my senator, but then I watched the State of the Union and saw our senior senator from the state of Maine sitting there with Tom Cotton and seemingly looking for direction, wondering, Susan Collins was, am I supposed to clap? Am I happy about this? I'm not sure. How do I react in these times?
Yeah, it's probably hard being her, because like her natural instinct is to like say that she's extremely concerned about something and then do what every other Republican does. And it's hard at a State of the Union deal because I think that you're not supposed to express extreme concern anymore. Like, that's not the idea. I was talking to a friend about, do you remember the You Lied guy, Joe Wilson, from 2008?
Yes, yes.
So he's still in the House. He's still there. And, you know, he's still in the House despite the fact that it later came out that he was taking money from people in the Klan, all kinds of bad stuff. But the thing that that whole affair, the part of it that feels the most ancient history to me is that he later apologized for it.
Right.
I just feel like at this point, that is by the boards. It's weird that, you know, whatever, Warren Boebert didn't hire, like, a skywriter to be in the House while the speech was going on or something. Like, this is, the next level here is so much dumber than anything we could anticipate. But yeah, like, poor Susan Collins, it feels like a dinosaur because she still feels like she's supposed to act like she's sorry about stuff.
Right, exactly. We're talking with David Roth here on Downtown. Well, let's circle back and wrap up with sports. It's been a pretty interesting NBA season, watching the Lakers implode and trying to figure out who's going to win the East. It's wide open out there. What do you think of things as we get to the home stretch?
I mean, I hope this will not seem like pandering. The Celtics are incredible. I have no idea what got into them. They started the season, I mean, I do. I read a story that I recommend to people at 538 by my friend Robert O'Connell about their defense, which explained a lot to me. But that was a team, I saw them early in the year, and they looked totally lost. They didn't seem to be vibing with Ime Udoka at all. And they're good. I mean, the whole East is very good. I mean, I've seen teams go back and forth. Like, the Heat seem excellent. The Bucks are still the Bucks, although, you know, they're obviously down some guys. To me, like, I have really enjoyed how, like, not just evenly matched, but how much of a kind of, like, styles make fights type dynamic there is in there, where all of these teams play very good defense and, you know, some degree of, you know, highly efficient offense. Like, I guess the Sixers now with Harden are super efficient, and yet they're all different. And they sort of interact with each other in different types of ways. And so, like, while there's not any of the sort of rivalries, like, that I remember from when I was a kid, you know, that it's like the Knicks hate the Celtics or whatever, you know, that, like, and are, like, constantly on the verge of fighting. It's mostly, like, stylistically, all of these teams are really very, like, well matched with each other. The Sixers seem, like, unbeatable, and yet I could absolutely see the Celtics beating them. I could see the Bucks doing it. Like, they're all, it's a question of who's where and what kind of counterpunching the coaches are doing. So that's been fun. It's nice to have the games that are on before I get sleepy be good.
Yes, I agree with you completely on that. David Roth from Defector with us here on Downtown. David, great to talk with you as always. Thanks for visiting with us, and I hope your trip works out well. I look forward to a complete report when you return.
Thanks very much, man. I always appreciate it. Have a good day.
You too. David Roth on Downtown.